Becky had been smoking. When she finally dawdled into the kitchen, she peeled back the sides of the bag and tipped onto her plate a lump of greyish rice, studded with smaller lumps of orangey red and soft-looking black. Josie stared at it. "What's that?" "Risotto," Becky said. Her voice was proud. "Mum made it." She glanced at Rory and Claire, daring them to say that when Nadine had cooked the risotto the previous night, they'd all flatly refused to eat it. "I've got more." Becky's voice was conversational, almost pleasant. "I've got enough to last me till I go home again. I don't need to eat anything here." "Dad," Dale said, "we've got to have a tree." Tom Carver took his reading glasses off. "We don't need a tree. Four adults on Christmas Day don't need a tree." "Yes, we do," Dale said. "We're still a family." Tom put his glasses back on. "You may not like me saying this, but I don't want a tree because of Rufus."
"But Rufus isn't here."
"Precisely. It's just too soon for me to feel that Christmas is as Christmas was." Dale could feel her voice hardening and was not somehow able to stop it.
"Well, it may be too soon to play at Christmases again, but it doesn't seem to be too soon to play at having a girlfriend."
Tom took his spectacles off again. "Friend, not girlfriend. How do you know about her?"
"I heard you on the telephone. And you haven't been here on three nights when I've rung."
"Dale," Tom said, "I've had two meals with Elizabeth Brown, and she has come down from London on three weekday evenings, once for a concert, once for the cinema, and once for a private view of a painter friend of her father's."
"But you've never done that before?"
"No, because I was married. And you didn't like that much either."
"Josie was okay," Dale said.
"You can say that now because she's safely gone. I need a life, Dale. I'm a human being as well as your father." She looked at him, smiling.
"But you're my father first."
He smiled back. "Of course. Always will be." She leaned against him.
"Dad?"
"Yes?"
"We can have a Christmas tree, can't we?"
"I'm sorry," Tom had said, "that I can't see you over Christmas."
"That's fine," Elizabeth said. She meant it. She would have felt there was almost too much significance in an invitation from Tom Carver.
"What," he said, "do you and your father do at Christmas?"
"Oh, we go to a service in the Abbey and I cook something for him that isn't tinned soup, and we have rather too much to drink, and go to bed quite early."
"And you?" "I'm afraid we rather relive the Christmas we've always had. Crackers, tree, everything. Dale wants us to have stockings again. It was all perfectly seemly when Rufus was around, but without him I feel a bit of a fool." Tom had told her how violently her mother's death had affected Dale. Elizabeth had looked at Dale Carver's photographs in Tom's house and wondered at the raw need that drove her to try and exert some kind of control through insisting on a stocking still on Christmas morning.
"Hello," Elizabeth said. Rufus regarded her.
"I'm a friend of your father's. He's helping me with my new house. Did you just get here?"
Rufus nodded. "Daddy met me."
It had been such a relief to see his father's car in that lay-by where they'd agreed to meet. He'd wanted, to his shame, to cry, but he didn't because he felt guilty about his mother. He knew Josie was looking awful, and he knew his father must have noticed.
"Did you have a good Christmas?" Elizabeth asked.
I don't know. It was weird when they went away."
Elizabeth said gently, "Who went away?"
"The others," Rufus said. "Their mother rang. So they went."
The telephone call had come late on Christmas Eve after he was in bed. He heard his mother shout, "Becky, it's for you."
and then there'd been mutterings for a while, and then he heard the phone bang down, and then there was pandemonium. After a bit, Rory came tearing into their room and started to ram all his stuff into his rucksack. Rufus reared up in bed. "Where are you going?" "Back to Mum's." "But it's Christmas." "Does it matter?" Rory kept his face averted from Rufus. "Does it bloody matter what it is?" Nadine looked at the piece of cold pork in the larder. She wasn't sure how long you could go on eating meat after it had first been cooked, and she cooked this almost a week before, on Christmas Day. It had been a present on Christmas morning from the farmer half a mile away, along with a paper sack of potatoes and a bag of Brussels sprouts. If he hadn't come, she didn't know what they would have eaten. Food, quite naturally, she thought, had hardly been uppermost in her mind when she telephoned Matthew's house and begged Becky not to leave her alone for Christmas. She wanted Matthew to come all the way to the cottage so that he could see what she was reduced to. But he said if he had to go more than halfway, he wouldn't bring them at all. Then he put the phone down on her, and she was so afraid she might miss meeting the children that she'd leapt straight into the car and driven off into the night. The children had looked exhausted, and then, a mile from home, Nadine's car had stopped dead. Nadine had said, as cheerfully as she could, that they'd have to walk. "No," Becky said. "What are you going to do instead, may I ask?" Nadine said with an edge of sarcasm. "Go to the farm." "What farm?" "The one the cows belong to." Becky returned in a Land Rover with a farmer called Tim Huntley. He told Nadine she'd run out of petrol and had filled the tank from a can in the back of his Land Rover. Then he got into the driver's seat and turned the key. The engine coughed once or twice and turned. "I'll be down in the morning," he said, "to see if she'll still fire." He'd come at 9 on Christmas Day, dumping the meat and vegetables on the kitchen table. He patted the pork. "Should crackle well." Nadine had been apprehensively counting bread slices to see if there'd be enough. "You are really, really kind." Later, she'd heard her car being started up, and later still found a pile of logs outside the door. "Mum," Becky said now from behind her as she stood in the larder, "can we go into Ross?" Nadine looked at her. "What will you do in Ross?" "Go round the shops." "With what?" Becky muttered something. Josie had given her a black nylon wallet for Christmas with a £10 note in it. "Did she give you money?" Nadine asked. "A bit." "Don't you know," Nadine demanded, "when someone is trying to bribe you?" Becky thought of all those meals she'd refused to eat, the bed she'd declined to make. In the steady opposition to her father's new marriage, Nadine's unfairness made her eyes water. "How can you be so disloyal," Nadine shouted, "as to take anything from her?" "It's all the money I've got," Becky said. "Ha," Nadine said. She marched past Becky with a handful of potatoes and dropped them thudding into the sink. "Welcome to the club." Becky looked at Nadine's narrow back bent over the sink. "Mum?"
"What?"
"When you and Dad sold our house..."
"Well?"
"Where did the money go?"
"Into the bank."
Couldn't we just use some of it?" Nadine turned round.
"No."
"Why not?"
"Because," Nadine said, "it's all the money I've got, all I'll ever have."
Becky said in a rush before her courage fled, "Why don't you get a job?" There was an ominous silence. Then Nadine said, "I've told you I can't work because of you children and where we are forced to live, and you have no right to ask me to. No right at all." Becky said to the tabletop,
"Other mothers work." "Ha!" Nadine shouted. "So that's what you're getting at, is it? She's got a job, has she? How dare you even make comparisons when you think what I've done for you and she's destroyed?" You should be ashamed of even mentioning her in my presence.
I didn't. I never do, Becky said, persisting. I'm thinking of you. You ought to get away from here. You ought...
She stopped. What ought I to do?
Becky cried wildly. You ought to use your energies for something else than just hating Dad.
There was a small, stunned silence, and then Nadine slapped her hard across her cheek. Becky gave a little cry. Nadine had never struck her before.
Oh, my God, Nadine said. Oh, my God, sorry. Oh, sorry.
Becky felt slightly sick. That's okay.
No, Nadine said. She stretched out a hand. No, it isn't. I should never have done it. It's just that I get so wound up, so angry.
I know.
Can't you understand, Nadine said. Can't you see what it's like to have made such a mess of everything?
Becky sighed. Whatever... She stopped. Go on.
Whatever it's like, Becky said. You shouldn't take it out on us. ¶¶